You come to the SEC, you want to compete against the very best. I believe that some of the very best athletes are in this league. That's where they come to play. And then you have some of the greatest coaches in football. Lane's an excellent coach. Coach Leach's an excellent coach. It's all part of playing in the SEC. You want to play the best.
That was the unmistakable voice of LSU head football coach Ed Orgeron, speaking this week about the start of the SEC season tomorrow. It's a season that's gonna feel super different from what we're used to. Gone are the packed stadiums and campus tailgates, and in are coaches wearing masks and COVID protocols. But with defending national champs LSU continuing to slug it out with Alabama, and the arrival of new head coaches like Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach, there is still so much to talk about. Today, Spencer Hall joins us to break down this historically weird SEC season and also what this college football playoff could ultimately look like. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, September 25th. This is ESPN Daily. Spencer, dude, first off, thank you for doing this. I just listened to you on SVP. I just caught up with the shutdown fullcast from last week. I've been like mainlining Spencer Hall in preparation for today.
Oh God, there's really no counter for that, no cure. So don't donate blood for like 2 weeks. You gotta let that cycle out.
Spencer Hall is possibly a controlled substance and definitely part of the new cast of Thinking Out Loud on the SEC Network. Spencer, I am bringing you here on ESPN Daily because you know the SEC as well as anyone, and the SEC football season is kicking off tomorrow, granted a few weeks behind schedule, and admittedly with a kind of apocalyptic feel to the usual circus that we're accustomed to. Stadiums are going to be about 20% full, tailgates already banned apparently. So what do you think it's going to be like watching your favorite sport and your favorite conference this weekend?
Nothing will be normal. I think that's something that anyone watching this just has to agree on by even a small percentage. There's not going to be the same number of people in the stands. That's not normal. The teams themselves are going to have roster concerns. These are things that, like, we don't get around. You have to admit that. Like, no, it's the same. It's fine. No, it's different. Everything will be different when you watch football this weekend. Among other things, I think this is a real shame because, there won't be anybody to really fully appreciate all of the great absurdities that I feel like that need an audience. Like,
right.
South Carolina just unveiled like a gigantic, fearsome looking chicken statue outside their stadium.
What kind? Are we talking like a foghorn leghorn? Are we talking about like a chirping chicken? What kind of chicken?
We are talking a fierce gamecock. We are talking a chicken flying through the air with talons thrust forward and a look of like great ferocity and malicious intent on its face and wings floraled to the sides, right? Like that's what we're talking about. And like, there won't be a crowd around that. If you want to know like where this disconnect really hits home for me and where it makes me saddest, it's that I'm not going to be able to sit in a crowd and look up and behold the majesty of this giant chicken that South Carolina's made.
I feel bad beginning what is ostensibly an SEC preview by talking about South Carolina's chicken. So I'm going to talk to you about LSU for a second.
Sure.
When you look at LSU, Spencer, I mean, they've lost 15 starters from last season. Joe Burrow, first overall pick quarterback, gone. Ja'Marr Chase, their star wideout, opted out. He's gone. The offensive and defensive coordinators are both gone, having taken other jobs. And just last week, Ed Orgeron said that most of the team had tested positive for COVID and have apparently since recovered.
Not all of our players, but most of our players have caught it. So I think that hopefully they don't catch it again, and hopefully they're not for games, you know.
I just want to know, when you watch Ed Orgeron on the sideline this season, like, what do you think you're going to see? What kind of LSU experience are you going to get?
It's going to be, I think, a rebuilding year that LSU's going to be able to tolerate because One, I don't think that they're going to backtrack entirely from a lot of the changes that made them so successful last year.
Joe, quick fire. Chase has it across the middle. Breaks a tackle at the 45 of Vandy. Gets to the far sideline. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Tigers! 51-yard
touchdown. College football is very, in a lot of ways, more scheme dependent, I think, than even pro ball, because everybody needs a relatively simple system that they can pick up pretty quickly and use interchangeable talent on. However, this is my favorite thing when you go, okay, well, how much talent did they lose? And I'm like, what did you see Clyde Edwards-Helaire do for the Chiefs? He's wrecking business.
10, 5, touchdown! Kansas City! What a night for the rookie Clyde Edwards-Helaire! A great cutback.
And you go, oh, man, well, where was he? And you're like, oh, he was at LSU. And you go, oh, okay, well, look, the Bengals almost won, which is like a victory for any other team. And who was behind that? Well, Joe Burrow, as a rookie, turns out, dude's pretty good.
Burrow with time, floats it downfield, caught at the 2 by Uzama, and he runs it into the end zone for Joe Burrow's first NFL touchdown pass.
You go, ah, well, that came from somewhere, didn't it? Oh, yeah, it came from LSU. Is that going to be a step down? Yeah, it's absolutely going to be a step down. That is the best LSU team that has ever played in Baton Rouge, with their best quarterback and what I believe was their best running back. And I don't think you're going to get anything close to that. However, even if we come down a standard deviation, you still might be talking a 9 or a 10 win team. You're just not going to get that kind of excelsior performance. You're just going to fall to like acceptably excellent and probably lose to Alabama.
So you mentioned excelsior performances. I feel like the most excelsior performance this week came from Ed Orgeron's mom on 60 Minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that she was Ed Orgeron? I guess it makes sense biologically, but I had no idea that this character existed.
What do you remember about LSU beating Alabama last year?
You know, I love their stadium. I don't care for what the people say. They're kind of loud and boisterous. But when we won, I enjoyed the living hell out of it.
Her name's Coco Orgeron, and she's from Houma, Louisiana. Like, that's what she's going to sound like. that's part and parcel. So it was delightful because Coco Orgeron's delightful, and because I don't think you can go to Louisiana and have a bad time if you hang out with people from Louisiana. So it didn't really surprise me. Also, her name is Coco Orgeron, an amazing combination of syllables to make a mellifluous and beautiful Cajun name.
Mellifluous is such a great word. It is also a word that I am fairly certain has never been used to describe the man the Orgerons unseated at the top of the SEC, Nick Saban. So Nick Saban's Alabama team missed the playoff last year for the first time since the whole format was birthed back in 2015. So what do you think is going to be on the line for Saban and Alabama this year?
So I think what people need to remember is this, that Alabama, if it stopped right now and you took Nick Saban out of the equation, they would still be the best and deepest team in the SEC for 2 years running minimum. Like, I don't think Georgia would catch them for another year, maybe two, right? Imagine them as a big boulder moving downhill. It's going to take time for it to come to rest. And when it does, it would take a lot of time to get it moving again. But the basic potential energy of the program, it's immense, thanks to everything that dude and the people behind the scenes of Alabama have put into it. No program is more devoted or focused on football than Alabama. That's by intensity and by proportion. They just devote more time and energy, more money to it than anyone else.
So that focus and that intensity and the process powering it, it all flows straight out of the body of Nick Saban. What do you think is going through his incredibly focused and also control freak brain heading into a season that is going to be so inherently uncontrollable?
Oh, it is focused no further than the next game. He is thinking about September 26th at 7 p.m. They play Missouri. That is the most football brain thing in the world to say we are only thinking about the next game, but that is all they are thinking about. And then Nick leaves any tactical meetings with the answers that he wants. There's an amazing detail about the differences between Saban and Belichick in a Jenny Vrentas Sports Illustrated article that I think gets at what I'm talking about when I talk about the intensity of Nick Saban and the detail that he works with. Belichick wants one answer for one problem, one issue. So when we see this, we call this defense. Is that what we want to do? Yes. Okay, cool. Then that's what we're going to do. They need one answer, just to keep it simple. Nick Saban, who coaches a college football team, not a professional team, wants all of them. He wants all of them. I mean, every possible defensive answer to that on the card, ready to go and ready to be called. He wants all of the answers out there.
Spencer, when it comes to order, if Nick Saban is at one end of this spectrum, it feels like the absolute other end of that spectrum is Mike Leach.
Mm-hmm.
So he's about to coach his first game at Mississippi State, and there is all the colorful stuff about Mike Leach. It's the obsession with Pirates.
You have to go with the Vikings in the cold weather. If it's at sea, you have to go with the Pirates because, of course, they have cannons and everything.
It's his offensive genius. It's the fact that he was literally a character in a Michael Lewis feature at one point. But he also kind of feels like the quirky, lovable guy whose, like, Facebook page you stumble across one day accidentally, and then you discover that on that page he's been posting severely problematic memes.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you expect out of the Mike Leach experience at Mississippi State?
It's not going to be much different than every other experience that Mike Leach has had, because all he's done is coach in places that have been kind of at the perimeter of the college football map, you know, whether it's at Valdosta State, whether it was at Lexington, whether it was at Pullman or Lubbock. Remember, you go, well, how far out is Mike Leach? Mike Leach coached at the place that is farthest away from every other FBS school, which is Lubbock, Texas. The moon itself. That's where Mike Leach has spent his whole career. So for him to do this, it's really in keeping with the theme of his entire career that he would go to the one place in the SEC where, you know, coaching tenures go to die. Like, Starkville is a place where if you're a successful coach, you leave as soon as you can. Darryl Royal was at Mississippi State. Notice Darryl Royal didn't stay at Mississippi State. You know, he got out. There are a couple of exceptions to that rule. Dan Mullen is one. But eventually in the end, remember, Dan Mullen left and went back to Florida.
Right.
I noticed, by the way, this year, Mike Leach, they must have hidden his phone.
Yeah.
They took that dude's phone the minute 2020 turned into a tumultuous year. They're like, no, son, you ever thought about just focusing on football? Let's just focus on football.
I feel like that just means that somewhere Mike Leach is operating a prodigious burner account.
Either a prodigious burner account or he's on Angel Fire or Zanga. He's on some super old internet thing. He's never updated. He's got like the last Friendster account in the world, and he's posting all of the kind of problematic dad memes on it that he can. He hasn't even caught up to Facebook yet.
I want to imagine for a second, like, the Egg Bowl this year, because
mm-hmm.
It's not just that Mike Leach went to Mississippi State. It's not just that he is this character. It's that his counterpart at Ole Miss is specifically Lane Kiffin. How would you describe Lane Kiffin to somebody who has no idea who Lane Kiffin is?
Imagine Lane Kiffin as, I think, the closest thing we have to an Arrested Development character in the coaching ranks. And by that, I mean somebody who had a fair amount of privilege, but has now gone through a number of different turns, twists, pratfalls, outright disasters.
Our breaking news into SportsCenter, Lane Kiffin relieved of his duties as USC's head football coach. Trojan athletic director Pat Hayden informing Kiffin of his termination upon the team's charter arrival back in Los Angeles early this morning.
And multiple shots at redemption.
I couldn't be more excited to introduce our newest Rebel, your new head football coach, Lane Kiffin.
And now sits at a point where he's a head coach again. I don't know if anybody thought that might happen. By the way, Ole Miss is an extraordinarily talented team, and Ole Miss has always had talent. It's just a matter of how that talent is distributed compared to larger talents on either side of them. It's a tough neighborhood. If Mississippi had one school right? If we just took Miss State and Ole Miss and made them one enormous truck driving, catfish loving conglomerate of a school in Mississippi, then you'd be looking at one of the best programs consistently in the United States.
Mm.
As it is, we take that talent and we carve it up between two schools and then put that state next to Alabama, which is consistently going to poach your best talent, and LSU. That's the situation at Ole Miss. I think Lane Kiffin's very good at optimizing talent. Program management down the road is always a hard thing. Building up a program and keeping it sustained over time is difficult. That's no slight against Lane Kiffin. Consider that there are people like Urban Meyer, who arguably one of the best coaches of his generation, had serious trouble managing a program past that 4 and 5 year mark. Keeping that consistency, keeping that intensity, that's really hard, right? If you don't build in the kind of unhappiness in the system that you can only get from having a relentless shark like Nick Saban at the helm, then you're going to have to take a slightly different approach.
Coming up, let's talk about the state of the rest of college football and what an eventual playoff after this 2020 season might actually look like.
Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Spencer, I want to look at the rest of college football, too, because on the horizon, that golden shining dome that is the University of Notre Dame, they have a coronavirus outbreak. They postponed their scheduled game against Wake Forest. Notre Dame is now in the ACC. They're with Clemson. They're with Miami. If Notre Dame actually ends up taking the field again this season, how do you see their ACC experience going?
Pretty well. Because I think, one, the ACC this year is a ton of developmental projects and Clemson. They're going to do real well playing a bunch of teams that simply aren't as talented as they are. The better news that their next scheduled game that they have to play is at home, and it's against Florida State, a team that has a head coach who is coaching remotely because he tested positive for coronavirus and has been isolated from the team. By the way, how did the head coach test positive for COVID while with the team but didn't infect anyone else? These are questions to ask an epidemiologist and not me. Notre Dame has been pretty, like, you can see programs handling this very differently. Mizzou has been pretty upfront about how many players have COVID and consistently reports those numbers because, as Coach Eli Drinkwitz said, this is a public health issue. This is not a competitive advantage. Oklahoma was being really good about it, but Lincoln Riley's gone back and forth in terms of saying, you know, well, no, this actually is a competitive advantage if they know how many people were missing. So we're not going to report those numbers. Notre Dame's been pretty upfront. So I know that I would love to come on here and do nothing but talk trash about Notre Dame. It's fun. Their fans react very poorly to it. I find it personally satisfying. Is that flattering? Do I feel good about it? No. Does it make me a bad person? Maybe. But I still like to do it. But I can't because Notre Dame on the whole has been extremely transparent, or I think as transparent as they can be given the circumstances. And if they continue to do that, then kudos to them. I'm not going to make fun of them because I think it looks like a bigger mess than it actually is, especially because the slate they have playing in a conference this year makes sense. That's a set number of games, which is something that not all teams have at this point, right? Like University of Central Arkansas, I don't know. They might play 7 games. They might play 5. They might play 23. They play Eastern Kentucky twice in a month. They play them on October 24th. And then they meet the Colonels again to play them in their own stadium on 11-14, on November 14th.
Amazing.
That's just how much they love football. They'll show up anywhere. They'll play anyone. You know, they'll play Arkansas State. If they want to play Arkansas State again, I bet they'd take it. You got a bus ticket? Let's roll.
So speaking of this dilemma of, are we playing? How often are we playing? What are we even doing here? We need to talk about the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
Because last week, Big Ten announces they've reversed course after all of these protests, parents in front of empty buildings, holding signs, picketing, players having a movement towards wanting to desperately play football. So they're doing it now. They are playing starting in late October. And the Pac-12, reportedly, is about to follow suit. What do you make of all of these conferences trying to play football amid all of the obvious health concerns that seem to emerge and just grow in the eyeballs of every college football fan day after day?
Well, it should reinforce the reality of the sport, which is that no one is in charge. It'd be so cool to be an NHL fan because y'all hate Gary Bettman. God, y'all hate Gary Bettman. It's an art to hating Gary Bettman. We don't have anyone to blame, but, you know, people you've never heard of. I know for some college football fans, it's like, yeah, Kevin Warren, he's the commissioner of the Big Ten. You know what Kevin Warren gets at the valet stand everywhere in the world that doesn't know he's the commissioner? Nothing. He gets his keys. That's it. He gets his keys and or the ticket for his car. There's not a whole lot of VIP for that. There's not a lot of people who could pick out Greg Sankey, right? Or even their own school president. And these are the people who are making the decisions. What do you think the University of Michigan president has to do with football on a daily basis? Not much. You don't want them to have a whole lot to do with football on a daily basis.
No.
So when they make these decisions, if they have big COVID things, football's just another thing on the list. When they decide to shut down, in reality, what they're thinking is, how can we get as much money to the university as possible over the next, you know, 6 months to a year so that we're not looking at a sea of red for the next 10? That's what they're looking at. So if you want to know what's driving the decision to play again, it's that. The reality is sometimes your interests, they're not going to line up with the institution's priorities overall. And I think you saw with the Big Ten, they're sometimes almost embarrassed that they have to consider football, you know, while they're considering, you know, their academic prestige, right? And particularly places, yeah, like Ohio State and Michigan, which are these, you know, big, super respectable state schools, and especially at places like Northwestern, where it's academics first, and then, oh yeah, we happen to own a football stadium on Lake Michigan.
Spencer, I need to ask you to look way, way ahead, past all of the dysfunction of what will happen in these coming months, ahead to the college football playoff. Because on Wednesday, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, he alluded to a number of challenges, quote unquote, facing the playoff selection committee, given the disparate schedules this season, the cancellation of games due to COVID, the fact that all of this stuff really doesn't add up in any sort of even way. How would you describe the task of selecting a college football playoff field this year?
This, I think, is pretty easy. In college football, we have not just one way of determining a champion. Over the history of the sport, there have been at least 60 to 70 different, very stupid ways of awarding a championship. So adding one really kind of absurd and unjustified way of determining a champion to the pile that actually involves a playoff, that's a small crime compared to some of the things that have happened and some of the teams that have been shafted in college football. First of all, the Pac-12 may not make it. Who knows? So we don't have to worry about them at all. That's not going to happen. Second, we're going to go ahead and say that the Big Ten's only playing 8 games, but we will evaluate them on even par for those 8 games. Cool. I think that's going to be great. I think a team like Ohio State, with the set talent they have, is going to make an easy case to go ahead and enter the playoff. And then the rest of it, we'll just look at the records. And there's always a reason I can go ahead and take somebody at the 4 spot instead of the 5 spot. Like, that's really, when we talk about expanding the playoff, you're always talking about that last slot is genuinely the most controversial.
So I think the choices will actually be should be pretty easy. If you told me it's going to be Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, and I don't know, you can pull a wild card from like Texas. Okay, Texas ends up making it somehow. Okay. Doesn't that look a lot like any year between now and 1995? Kind of looks a little bit like that. So we'll have a lot of controversy. We'll end up with something that, ironically, and against the rest of 2020, looks like college football.
All right, up next. Spencer, I need you to help out a clueless Northeasterner. That is, me. Figure out which team I should adopt and shamelessly claim as my own in the SEC this season.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Spencer, I want to get you out on a particularly personal concern because I actually want to make you a one-man committee that has a very important job. I need you to help me pick an SEC team to root for, kind of like how they do for like fans who don't know anything about the Premier League. Like mm-hmm. They have some sort of discussion. You pick Tottenham Hotspur. I know the SEC some, but I'm not native to it. I'm from New York.
Okay.
You know me, though. You have a good sense of like my personality and what I'm into. Talk me through who I need to be rooting for as the SEC kicks off this weekend.
Okay, so I'm going to ask a series of questions. We're going to keep the questionnaire pretty short. I think I can do this in 5 questions, okay?
Okay.
One, name current rooting interests across sport. I know that you are a Knicks fan, correct?
Yeah, ancestrally a Knicks fan. Yep.
Okay.
Yep,
so you inherited that, though. That's a disqualifier there, so I'll add that or a qualifier. Mm. You inherited that. What are your other teams?
I mean, what I chose in replacement was the Philadelphia 76ers, which is its own ball of wax. Otherwise, I root for the New York Giants, and I do root for the Yankees because, again, I am a New York coastal elite.
I was going to say, you went to Harvard, root for the Yankees. We are definitely leaning Alabama. And yeah, you're definitely leaning Alabama here. So how much do you like being outside on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being I am an indoor cat and with 10 being I have not worn shoes in 6 months?
Ooh, see, I haven't worn socks in 6 months. I'm going to give myself like an 8. I really do like, but here's the problem, Spencer. I also was notified after my blood work that I have a vitamin D deficiency. So I think I'm aspirationally an outdoor person, but in reality, like, I guess I should give myself like a 5.
Oh, no, though. That's important, though. I think like, that's very good. That's very good. Okay, so aspirational outdoor person, but has a vitamin D. Okay. Let's see. You are, you're very good with names, so it would be a team that has a lot of names because you remember people, you remember details. And then finally, I think with the existing profile you have with the New York Knicks, the Sixers, the Giants, and the Yankees, the one thread here is that wins things, but also shot through with extraordinary levels of disappointment. So,
yeah,
Pablo, yeah. I'm going to have you leaning UGA.
Wow.
Because one, you're not going to have to change colors from college too much. It's not crimson, but it's definitely red, right? So you're not going to change this too much. It's you live in New York, so I'm not going to put you too far out in the sticks. Athens is just a 45 or like hour 15 out to Athens in traffic.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put you out there because you'll be outside. But I think when you say aspirationally outdoors, but really you have a vitamin D deficiency, that definitely fits the Georgia thing of I like being outside. Well, what does that mean? I play golf and sit on my porch. Okay, different definition, right? Like LSU and Arkansas, too woodsy for you. Little too woodsy, okay? Vanderbilt doesn't even go that far, so I couldn't put you there. Also, I'm not going to sentence you to that, okay? Because
Thank
Vanderbilt
you.
Doesn't have a tradition of winning. UGA lean because you're going to be successful. Occasionally you're going to win stuff. Conference titles only since 1980, but still there was 1980. Sometimes outdoors, but not too strenuous. And on the whole, you're going to have a good time. Like, that's a good time. I don't want you to have a bad time. You're going to have a great time. Athens is delightful.
Spencer Hall, thank you so much for joining me and helping me figure out my life.
My pleasure, Pablo.
For more Spencer Hall, check him out on the Shutdown Fullcast podcast and the mooncrew.substack.com newsletter. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Troe, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Russell Dinallo, Max Brodsky, Janet Janovy, Dave Saronic, and Troy Farkas. I'll talk to you Monday.